Welcome to the FitPro Lead Gen podcast, where each Monday we bring you a brand new guest interview. And today we have another big one for you. But before we do dive into this week's guest interview, I just want to say a big thank you to LeadDeck for sponsoring these shows. LeadDeck is the all-in-one platform that helps you generate more leads and get more bookings. As usual, if you want to join in live with these guest interviews and ask questions to the guests themselves, then come and join us in the free Facebook group. In there, you'll be able to join in with these interviews and find a load more resources to help grow your fitness business. Anyway, enough of me talking. Let's dive into this week's guest interview. Hey guys, and welcome to a brand new episode on the FitPro Lead Gen podcast. Today, we've got Shane Mulgrew all the way from Ireland. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. Nice to meet you. Thank you, David.
It was just purely guessed by the accents. Anywhere specific in Ireland?
Marfalt. Originally a drone man, but living in Marfalt, so about 40 minutes from Belfast. Most people will know Belfast City.
Nice, cool. North or, like north or south of Belfast, or going further inland?
It's Northern Ireland, so you're, I mean, you're about, as I say, you're, I mean, 10, I mean, sometimes 35 minutes outside Belfast, let's say. Nice. We're pretty rural. We're nearly in the sticks, you know.
Is the Wi-Fi any good? That's the big one when we do these kind of interviews.
It's it's 100%. Don't worry. It's excellent, nice. Yeah.
Nice. Okay, so Ben reached out to you, asked you to come on the podcast, and then here we are today. So before we dive into sales and closing and high ticket and all the other stuff that we're going to talk about, how did you yourself get into the fitness industry?
Well, I've always played sport. I mean, it's just a part of my family life. I just always played it, whether it be here in Ireland, we play Gaelic football, obviously soccer, heavily involved in soccer, but I mean, I was just obsessed with all sports. I was sort of that guy that was sort of lucky enough to be decent enough at all physical activity. And then I was heavily involved in soccer. So I went across the water a few times to a few professional clubs. And that's where it all began, I suppose.
Nice. And did you ever make it? Did you ever become a professional footballer?
No, unfortunately not. As I said, the last one I was at Manchester City for a really long time, and unfortunately, I just wasn't good enough at that stage to sign pro. But I wasn't far away. But for whatever reason, life had a different path for me, you know.
So, what brought you then to the fitness industry, and maybe kind of fast forward to where you are to today, then?
Again, I was just obsessed with it. So once I came home from playing soccer, and I suppose I lost that wee bit of interest once I realized I wasn't going to be a professional footballer. I was heavily involved in Gaelic football, my local team, and then the big thing here is playing for your county, which was Tyrone at the time. But fitness and, I mean, looking after yourself, obviously I was a younger lad, so having a six pack was important at that time, but now not so much. But it's just progressed from there. I've basically done every single sport or activity there is, and it's taken me today, which I'm now a CrossFit competitor and a Hyrox competitor, if you know what they are.
Yeah.
So high performance athlete, I suppose. I could call myself that, as well as obviously what I do for my career.
Nice. And tell me about the fitness business side of things. What is your fitness business side of things?
So, yeah, I help people. I mean, I was helping people basically with their physical appearance years ago. I was a personal trainer, and then I developed that business to help people online. So it's essentially an online coaching business. But it's evolved till, I suppose, a more internal aspect of development. I believe that everything, you know, comes within. So I believe that there's people have core issues as to why, you know, why they can't discipline, you know, why they can't eat clean, or why they can't perform at high levels. So I believe everything starts within. And that's where my coaching has developed to, but it always comes to that outer physical aspect of things as well, which is your physical performance and your appearance then as well. Obviously, it's all, I mean, everything's interlinked. But what I come to realize in, I suppose, my own development in the business and working with, I mean, so many clients and different industries, that it's your performance is so important. So, which is your health, you know, your mental energy, okay? How you perform it at anything, you know, reflects everything else. So basically, it's a high-performance business where we help people in different industries perform at an elite level, whatever that may be.
Nice. So you'd got qualified and then you started working with these people. At what point did you realize that you had to be very specific about the audience that you work with? Or was it just something that just came naturally and you kind of started to understand that you weren't getting results and you did a deeper dive into it?
Yeah, again, I was just, I mean, learning as I go. I was just winging it, to be honest. And then I realized that I did the same as a lot of other people. You know, there's so many people helping, you know, people lose weight, you know, and that just didn't really align with me. There's more to your health and there's more important things. So I had to invest in that. So I had to invest my own development in different coaches or programs, you know, whatever it may be. I put myself out there to learn more and develop. And I did learn then as I evolved, I learned that your audience is incredibly important, to be specific and niche. If you think of a doctor, you know, in comparison to a surgeon, you know, they are, I suppose, seen as different, you know, different professions, but one is more niche than the other. Okay, a brain surgeon and a doctor helps so many people. A brain surgeon helps people specifically in that area. So I needed and wanted to become more niche in that area. So that's where I dived into sort of elite performance and doing that, then fulfilling that. The coaching fulfillment process is more unique, it's more advanced, okay? It's much more hands-on. So that's what I like, you know, that's what I like, opposed to having a group program that helps a lot of, you know, middle-aged men and women lose weight. You know, it's not as niche, it's not as specific. So again, everybody's different, everybody wants different things, but for me, I wanted to be a bit more niche.
Nice. So when you were really thinking about trying to niche down, had you considered that maybe you were sacrificing an entire other audience to only work with this one audience? Because you might have people listening or watching now thinking, but I just work with everybody. At what point did you realize you made the right decision to be specific?
Yeah, that's a major fear. And I think for a lot of the people I work with as well, that's a fear for them, is they don't want to leave anyone out, because whether it be they want to help so many people or they want to make money, you know, they want financial growth. So obviously it makes sense, if you work with more people, you have an opportunity to get more clients, you make more money. But unfortunately, when you are more niche, you are more appealing to the public eye. And that's what I had to learn and develop as well. So again, I had that fear of, you know, becoming more niche, you know, working with either athletes or you know, business owners, elite business owners that needed to perform, they needed to lead teams of people. So I wanted to be specific in that area. I find it incredibly difficult, don't get me wrong, but I think it's so important to be, if you're not going to be niche, then you need to be the very best at what you do in a very global, like the online coaching space and online business space is very broad. You know, there's so many people doing it. So you, to stand out from the crowd, you need to be bringing in a high volume of income in order to then put that into ad campaigns, which a lot of people aren't very good at, let's say. So you're putting a lot of your financial, putting yourself under a lot of financial risk as well. So I think the first step is creating a niche, absolutely.
So you've created this niche for yourself, then. How are you able, like you said, it's a very busy market, the online world. How were you able to really like have a foothold for yourself and be seen as more of a higher authority compared to everybody else that was going for the same target audience?
I mean, I can't recommend other people do this, but I sort of stopped thinking about it. I created a niche for myself and then took myself away from all the marketing, the obsessive marketing. So I have basically specialized in different areas within business, and I wanted to fulfill those different aspects, maybe building teams, okay, for people, or high ticket closing. But then on the side, I've got my own high performance coaching. So basically, I needed to create two side hustles that provided an income for myself, and then slowly but surely still dip my toes into my own business. So I had no urgency then. I wasn't putting myself, like, all my eggs into one basket. And I felt that was important for me because I wanted to continue to grow in my own way with a nice flow without putting pressure on myself. I knew I had an expertise in obviously closing deals for people, which is high ticket closing. And then I love sort of leadership. I have sort of leadership qualities which are really important in today's world, where we can help people build really, really effective teams that produces really high results. So I do that as well as my own thing, which means that the thing I do for myself, my own coaching, is all in my terms. I don't need, you know, 25 clients a month or so many clients. I'm not under pressure to do that, which is important for me. But I mean, if you're looking to grow your business really fast, you may want to go deep dive into your own business and do that. For me, it just didn't make sense.
Nice. Okay. So the online world, again, is difficult to price, if that makes sense. Where if you're going to do one-to-one PT, you might just decide, you know what, I want to earn £40 an hour, so I'm going to charge £40 an hour. I need 30 people a week. That gives me enough money to survive. But when you're working online, like, you can't price per hour, per whatever. How did you come up with pricing? Because there's going to be lots of people very interested to know on this question.
Yeah. Again, I was told what to do with them. I invested in coaches and programs, and I was told, okay, look, this is what your price is, and you grow from there. So my first ever online coaching program was $1,200. I think that was 1,200 for 3 months. You know, which isn't a lot when you devote, you know, so much time to a client. And then I grew to 3,600 for a period of 3 months, let's say. So it just, as you get better and you improve and develop, you know, the price goes up. The more niche, the more, and I mean, the result, as I say, like the doctor and the brain surgeon. So the more valuable you are, and the more valuable the result. So you get paid for the value you bring the marketplace. So pricing, I feel pricing is really important in regards to you. First and foremost, you need to add your time into that. So people think they get paid, as I said, look, let's say it's $1,000 a month, or whatever it may be. You know, you have to break that down into the time committed per client as well, and make sure you're not burning the candle at both ends. So, you know, pricing is it's a difficult one to get, but I feel, you know, depending on your life circumstances, so people have bills, as long as you are at a place where you are making a profit for yourself first and foremost, and you grow and develop from there. Obviously, there's one-to-one coaching, there's group coaching, there's elite masterminds, there's then the next step from that, so elite masterminds, elite one-to-one coaching. So it doesn't really matter what you call it, but there's a growth process there. There's a funnel where you can add additional pricing per client or per group. A lot of people do a lot of group coaching. They don't do any one-to-one anymore because they feel it's more time effective or time efficient to work with groups opposed to one-to-one. But it just depends on you. So I had this conversation with a client recently. She is just about diving into this online coaching world, first time doing it. She owns her own gym. She's a personal trainer, and she's looking to know how to do things. She's never done this before. She's never closed a deal online before. never worked with a client online before, so she's confused. I said to her, look, it has to align with you. You have to ask yourself if you are willing to do such and such, work with groups or work one-to-one. It has to align with you and the lifestyle that you want. And then pricing, and again, depending on the value you bring that person, is really, really important, you know?
So let's talk about that price, Nathan. You might have had someone's mouth drop when you said $3,600 for 3 months, and then they're thinking, there's no way I could possibly even charge, like you said, $1,200 for the first 3 months. I don't have the same experience as you. I don't have the same qualifications that you might have. How can I ever possibly tell someone that I'm worth this much for a 12-week program?
Again, you paid for the value you bring the marketplace. So you paid for the problem you solve. It depends how important that problem is to that individual. Again, price never should come into anything. If you have a particular audience, so if I was speaking to one individual and let's say they had a difficulty performing every single day, they needed to hit a certain KPI on a month-to-month basis, and they just couldn't do it. They had no energy. They felt really poorly. They just could not perform. They couldn't do their daily tasks. Okay. If I am the solution to that problem, then price should never come into it until the end. Okay. Then you ask specific questions about their financial situation, and then you make sure it's ethical to that individual to work with you. So that's the way like one-to-one coaching would work. You know, you would create something around what is important to that individual. So again, jumping to the result, there's so many coaches out there and systems out there that don't provide the result. So they are taking money off people, let's say, and they don't provide that result. So it's important that when people are investing in programs and courses and coaches, that there's a guarantee aligned to that result, because it's so important nowadays, because so many people are trying to make money online. So it's, you have to be, as a coach, you have to be ethical, but as an investor, as a prospect or a potential client, you have to be careful and make sure there's a guarantee aligned to that result, because it's so important that you are someone that helps people. You know, you solve a problem for people. That has to be the reason you do things. It's not, if you do it for the money, at some stage that will catch up with you, you know?
I think that is definitely a big thing we're seeing a lot of recently, is more and more people getting into industry, not delivering for the clients that they signed up, and then those clients being even more cautious when they speak to you, and the sale just becomes harder. So before we dive into the closing part then, everyone's going to be wondering, how do you possibly find these prospects initially? Like, are you just posting online and then the people are coming to you, or are you in a specific paid ads, or how are you finding people who can afford that amount of money?
Yeah, so again, depend on, you know, your marketing, or depend on what you do. If you are one of them shout out loud types of individuals, you'll see a lot of people doing a lot of marketing, so a lot of posting, a lot of message outreach. For us, we have a system that really, really works. Okay, so you build a team of appointment setters, we call them. So they are appointment setters because they are looking to specialize in building relationships with people. Okay, so they'll direct you to your business, whatever that may be. Let's say it's fitness coaching. So they are highly, you train them and you're highly skilled in fitness coaching. They're developing relationships over a short or long period of time. Okay, and then they are directing them to you. So they'll book appointments for you, and then you bring them through what you do to make sure they're a good fit for the process that you have. And then when it comes to close, it's making sure that, again, they're able to afford your service. And again, then the next step is fulfillment, so fulfilling that service. So that's a process that's working right now. It's incredibly profitable because you've got commission-based appointment setters. Okay, you're building teams, and they're high performers because their income is based on the the quality of appointments that they provide you as a business owner. So it's highly profitable, that sort of organic lead generation process. But there's so many ways to do it. It just depends on you and the type of personality and character you are. I unfortunately have done all the shouting out loud stuff, and it's just not me. Some people are really good at it. For me, it looked pretty false and fake. I was putting on an act because that's what I thought you needed to do, and I was only learning. But I feel like taking a step back and letting other people are better at certain jobs than you. So that's what I realized, is get people that are good at it to do that job, and then I'll do the fulfillment process, you know.
Nice. So I'm guessing you're using Instagram as your main lead gen channel then?
I don't really use social media as such. It's more referral-based. So I have a referral program where I built positive results. So one or two clients, we got really positive results. And then we use a referral program to develop more clientele. And that works really well. So again, putting the focus on the result opposed to speaking to as many people as you can, but there's that's sort of the that works for me, because I've got, you know, other things going on that are keeping me pretty busy. But if I wanted to just completely dive into high performance coaching only, yeah, I would definitely go about I think Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn would work really well.
Nice. Okay. Just lost my train of thought then. Yeah, the one thing I was going to say, the shouty people, that there's definitely a thing about trying to copy other people or use other people's stuff. And then when people come to speak to you properly, they're just like, wow, you sound very different to what you were online and stuff. So I think having, like you said, your own personality in your social media, in your emails, in your blogs or whatever it is that reflects you, will attract the right type of people to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I think we are all human beings, and we all sort of are attracted to a certain energy. So what if you are being yourself, then you will attract a type of client. I think that's important. If you be real, yeah, you've got the shout out loud people, and that's fine. There's not, I'm not against that. That's their personality, but you do get a lot of shout out loud people that aren't exactly like that. They're sort of putting on an act, you know. So, but again, each to their own. Everybody's different, and everybody has to try these things, you know, to develop and learn and evolve, you know.
100%. Okay, so we've got the appointment sessions, we've got the referrals, so we're getting somebody in front of you now. And now there's so many different ways to do a sale, like once they cry, they buy, you've got the two phone call sales strategy. There's so many different ways of doing it. What have you found to be the optimal way to close high ticket online?
The prospect has to be warm, you know, they have to be super, super warm. It's incredibly time consuming. You're speaking to someone that doesn't really know what you do. They're kind of interested. They're looking at 10 other options. Yeah. It's so important that your lead that you're speaking to is warm. They know who you are. They know what you do. They know the result you provide. If they tick those boxes, okay, then there's an opportunity there for that person to work with you. You know, you can help them solve a problem. On a sales call, it's really about making sure that the person's a good fit for you. If you know, and what I do, if you know the person needs your help and support, and you can help solve the problem that they have, then it's your duty to influence them to work with you, because you're helping that person.
Yeah.
So it's can't be about, okay, getting as many clients as you can because you're good at sales or because you're good at emotionally triggering people to buy. Once you realize you can help this person, then it's your duty to help them, to influence them to work with you. Okay. So that's part of the process. But again, it's pivotal that you're speaking to warm leads. That's essential.
So you're saying you wouldn't jump on a call with anybody until they jumped a certain number of hurdles.
It's not that you wouldn't jump on a call. You would have to create a you'd have to do a thing called a triage call. So a triage call is where you just have a conversation. It's not a sales call. You're just speaking to this person and you're having a conversation to see what they need. And if you can help them, then you'd say, look, I think you may be a good fit for what we do. Do you want to jump and hop on a call? If you're a good fit for what we do, I'll explain our program or process, and then we can take it from there. But if they're not a good fit, then you would just have a conversation with them. You would give them some free value, okay, so make sure that the call wasn't a waste of their time, and then you'd move on. But if the person is a warm lead, you have to develop a relationship with them. You have to ask them questions to make sure that you can actually help them. If you can, then you would say, look, are you open to having another chat? And then it would become I suppose we call it in the sales industry, a two-call close, so to speak, you know?
Yeah. So like you say, the two-call close or the pre-triage call, is that done via phone and then the main sales call is done on Zoom or something? Or are they both done on Zoom, or are they both done via phone call? How is that kind of done?
It doesn't really matter. It's whatever suits. Obviously, it's more efficient to do a phone call and then a Zoom. But I mean, it depends what the person wants. If the person is open till having a Zoom with you at the beginning, then take a Zoom, because you can sort of see if someone's real. You know, you can see their face. You can look at them in the eye to see if they're committed, and then they get to look at you as well. They get to sense what you're about. So I think Zoom's really, really good for that, first and foremost, for just building a connection to see if the person's actually real. I mean, you'll know if you've been in this industry for a while, you know the salespeople, you know what they're trying to do. And I suppose that's why if anybody was trying to sell me something, I would know straight away what they're trying to do. So I think it's important that other people know what salespeople are trying to do as well. It should never be a sales call. It's more a value call, you know.
So if we're looking at the two-stage call in, and obviously you've been doing this for a while and your pricing has increased over the term, and obviously you're helping people with their closing and high ticket sales as well, is there a certain price point where you could do it all on call one, and then when you get to a certain price point, you have to do the two-step or the two-call setup?
Yeah, I think every business is different. There's no right or wrong. Again, it's just making sure that everything you're doing is solving a problem for someone. So the price doesn't really matter as such, because it's really about the value you bring that person or that business. That has to be the most important thing. I mean, if it's business growth, then if someone's paying you $10,000 or pounds a year, and you're able to help them earn 50 grand a year extra, you know, that makes sense. So you're providing them with value. If it's someone that is looking to lose 2 or 3 stone in weight, and they are suffering incredibly with their health, and they are close to heart attack material, you know, you can save that person's life by helping them lose weight. You know, that becomes priceless value. So it depends on the individual. As long as it's ethical, as long as what you're doing actually solves a problem for that person. It depends on the price you set. Obviously, there's a lot of things that are overpriced, and people's marketing is really, really good. And you know, so many companies have so much ad spend and are so good at marketing that unfortunately they are able to influence people to do certain things, to pay money for things that they don't need. But I think this is why we do these calls, to help people, you know, to help that not happen to people, you know?
Yeah. Well, the perfect example is the iPhone compared to a Galaxy. Like, they both do the same thing. They're both exactly the same, yet one's like almost double the price. So if we're sticking with the two call setup, because again, lots of people in listening are probably like, I've never heard of that term or that kind of setup before. How can you refrain from actually trying to sell on that first call? What are the steps you need to take to make sure you actually book them in for a second call? Maybe not reveal the price, or just not go in for the kill on that first call.
It's just knowing it's a conversation. So I think, when I do it, it's just you're really just being yourself, and you're just looking to have a conversation. It's sort of like this. You're just, you know, there's there's nothing can come from this call. And all you're looking to do is show an interest in this person, because you want to find out if you can help them. If you can, then you would say, you know, look, we've had a great chat. I think I have a real deep understanding of what you do. Would you be open to having a chat? And they would say, okay, well, what's the price of your program? You just say, look, what we need to do is dive deeper into, you know, the problem that you have. If we can help you solve that problem, then we can chat about pricing. Okay, does that make sense? And look, if people feel that they don't want to jump on a call because of price, then it's fine. It's not the end of the world. You just move on. The reality is, in what we do, it's your duty to influence that person if you can help them. You know, so it doesn't become a salesy. It becomes your job is to help people take a step forward into progress or development or, you know, their own health. But the triage call is a conversation. It's so important that you're going into that call looking to show an interest in that person, trying to find out if you can help them. If you can't, then I always make sure I give them value or send them some form of value or in the right direction towards whatever they need.
Nice. So that first call is like you say, when you go to the doctors and you have that initial consultation, and then you're just going to say, I'm going to go away, I'm going to come up with some ideas, let's get you booked in for the next call tomorrow or later on, and I'll present my ideas and we can go into it in more depth, type of thing.
Yeah, so the triage call is more find out what their problem is. So it can be anything. So everybody has different problems personally, professionally, in career and business. So you're just really find out what their problem is. So again, if we jump to the fitness, if it's someone looking to lose weight, that's their major problem. And the reason for that is because they can't look at themselves in the mirror. They lack confidence. They have to go to bed and they have to take their clothes off with the lights off. You know, stuff like that. The people, that's really internally damaging for so many people. So if you are someone that helps people with that, then it's your job to help them, get them onto the next call so you can help them. If you don't do that, if you're just, let's say you're just a physical coach where you just help people, you develop physically, and this person's looking to develop internally to grow in confidence, and then you would say, look, I understand what you're suffering with, what your problem is, but unfortunately, I'm not the right guy for that. But I can absolutely connect you with this other person. I think that's where you start to, and I think it actually helps you. So I've done that a lot of times, and it feels good. It's a feel good thing as well when you're able to, you know, you're able to, I suppose, not pressurize someone into having a call just for the sake of it. I think that's important in the world we live in, because unfortunately, I'm one of those guys that I've been burned. I've invested in so many different coaching programs and I didn't get the result, unfortunately. And then come the end of the process, it was just see you later, bye-bye. It didn't work out for you. There was no real care there at all. And I suppose that's why it's important to me. It's important to the people that I work with. You know, so I think that has to be the key is you're looking after people, you know.
Everyone's gonna be in shock now. Did Shane just say that you have to say no to some people? No, well, that can't be true.
no, exactly. But it is hard. Don't get me wrong. If you're a coach now and you're looking to, you know, you're looking to develop and you're looking to grow your income, there becomes a time where unfortunately, you will end up working with the wrong people, and there's nothing worse. Trust me, there's nothing worse when they're working with someone that you can't actually help, and you're trying to lead them on this path, and they just don't connect with you. They don't align with you. It's the hardest job in the world. So it's not worth it. First and foremost, it's definitely not worth it. It's not right, but it's so draining, you know. And I found. So I was working with a young lady that was looking to develop her business. She was struggling to develop into the online coaching world. So I had to obviously introduce her, onboard her for the first 2 weeks. And then within 14 days, I had to say to her, look, it's not going to work out. I knew she was going to be incredibly difficult to work with, and I wasn't ready for that kind of that drain of my energy. So I sent her back her full refund, and it was hard. Don't get me, this is way at the start when I was trying to grow, but it had to be done because, you know, I wasn't going to be able to help her in the way I helped others, and I knew she was going to be a difficult client. So I just sent her the money back.
Yeah, I think, you know, after you've had that first couple of consultations, the first couple of sales, the first couple of clients, you start to see patterns, or you start to hear bells ringing. And when you hear those bells ringing or see signs, you know, this is not a good person to work with. Like, there's something internally telling you that this is a mistake. Do not accept them on. But like you say, having the confidence to say no initially is the hard part. Yeah.
Look, there's so many people. Like, I mean, just last week, I work in the American market as well with a company. We work with real estate investors, and I hopped on a call with this guy, and he just knew it all, and he had nothing to learn, and he basically said, look, I know it all. I'm incredibly established in this industry. You know, I just need such and such and such and such, and you can't help me. And I just said, fine. I says, you know what? You're obviously doing really well. I don't know why you booked this consultation with me in the first place. So I think, look, good luck. I wish you the best, but I don't think you exactly align with what we do.
Nice. Okay. So let's talk about consultations and kind of like appointments and stuff. What are your thoughts around charging people or getting people to put a deposit down for a consultation? Is that not something that you would do, or is that something that maybe you'd suggest, or not at all?
I've never done it. I don't know anybody that's done it. It might work. I mean, you would get true commitment if someone's looking to pay for a consultation. Your marketing would have to be incredibly good to get that done. But I've never done it before. I wouldn't do it either. I mean, the worst case scenario is you develop a relationship with someone and you don't sell them, or, you know what I mean? That's the worst case scenario for doing a free consultation. So, I mean, you're speaking to people, that's fine. I don't know why anybody would charge for it, you know?
No, that's totally fine. So what about when it comes to actually taking payment at the end of the call, and this person has said yes, they want to join? How nerve-wracking is it actually kind of saying, do you want to pass your card details over, or do you send them a link, or how does kind of payment usually work?
Yeah, it's just really simple. It's you just make sure they agree and understand exactly what they're investing in. So before you take a payment, you'll say, okay, so we need to make sure that you have a clarity and understanding on what we're doing here. Okay, so you give that to them. So every bullet point, every nut and bolt, to make sure they have a full understanding. And then you either, depend on how you use to take payments, you take their via Stripe, it works really well. Or you can send them a link, a payment link where it's safe. A payment link, you send an email to them, they do it. And you can stay on the call or send them a link if you trust that they're going to do it. But it's, again, if someone isn't, I suppose, if you send them a link and they don't pay, then they weren't really committed anyway. So it's fine. It's just part of the process. There shouldn't be any awkwardness in it, really. There is always, people always have doubt of, you know, paying for things online. So if there is doubt and you sense that in people, you just say, look, don't worry. I'm going to send you a link. And when it's paid, I'll get a notification, and then we'll onboard you from there. It's fine. Don't worry. So I think when people feel pressured, that's a problem. I don't think you should have to pressure people if you're truly understand that what they need, and you are solving their problem. I think it's really, 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 really easy, you know?
you're going against some of these major like marketing companies or business growth companies. They don't let them off the phone until they pay, no matter if you send them an email and you pay later and all these different types of things.
Yeah, so trust me, I've been that guy that, I mean, a sales call with a guy that has, you know, he's tortured me in the phone, and he has every sales skill in the book, and it's you're like, I feel like I'm a nice guy, and I find it hard, like I wouldn't close the phone on anybody, but yeah, they take you down this path, and because you've answered a question at the start of the call or at the middle of the call, you feel like pressurized, and I just would hate to make anybody feel like that.
Yeah.
And I think those sales guys, so if you think of the Wolf of Wall Street, that type of way of sales, that was a common practice, I suppose, years ago. But nowadays, I don't think it works anymore. It's unethical. I think people are really, really clued into it. You know, that just being a salesy person, it's off-putting. You're repelling people. So I don't think that way works anymore. You will get loads of guys like that. You'll get the gift of the gab type people. But it doesn't work with me. You will never, ever, ever sell to me if you're like that.
So you think, I was going to gloss the train of thought then. It's all about how you feel. And like, if you've done that tactic, you've maybe started a relationship off on the wrong foot, and it could potentially only go down from there, would you kind of say then?
Exactly. As I say, sales people, I mean, the sales skill, it's the greatest skill in the world, because really it's your personality, it's your character. You know, so I always find that for anybody that is that's going into a career, to develop sales skills, be able to build relationships with people, because that's what it is. I think if there's anything that feels wrong or that feels incorrect, you know, that's not a relationship that should be developed or moved forward. There's a problem there, you know, and we all have a gut feeling. So we all have that gut feeling of, is this person real? Is this going to work? I always think if it seems risky, it probably is, you know. So I think anybody that's listening or salespeople out there, I think if you can be yourself all of the time, you know, that's true. And that's all, you can't apologize for being true to yourself. And you will connect with certain people in the best way, and they will be able to relate to that. I think if you're putting on an act, if you continue to watch the movies of the way salespeople act and go on, you're being false and fake. People will see right through that, you know. But again, that's just me. I'm still a student of this game. I'm always learning, and who knows, I might change that perspective in the next 5 to 10 years, but right now I think it's just so important to just be yourself, you know.
Nice. Okay, my final question for you then. So we've been prospecting, we've been getting people on the first call and on the second call, but we're just not closing. We just can't get anybody to say, yes, I want to join. What kind of things do you think maybe are going wrong somewhere? What are we doing wrong to not be able to close anybody?
Yeah, well, definitely I would look at the very start, your lead generation. You must be speaking to people that's warm. That is pivotal. I can't reiterate how important that is, that the people you're speaking to, you need to be able to help them. They need to be warm. They need to know who you are and what you do. Cold calls, I mean, it becomes a numbers game. And again, sales isn't always a numbers game, but it will come to that. If you're really poor at sales and you're speaking to the wrong people, you will sell somebody sooner or later, you know. But it makes so much sense to speak to warm leads. People that know your name, know your business, they know what you do, and you know you can help them. And as I say, if you know you can help them, then it's your job to influence them to work with you. So that's the first step, is to make sure you're speaking to warm leads, prospects, and then the next step is your close. Once it comes to the close, if you can help this person, again, remembering this isn't, you're not forcing anybody or putting pressure on them to work with you. you know you can help them. So what do you need to do to help this person see that you can help them? And that's really it. So you would look at either the start, which is your lead generation, or the end, which is your close. Most people can follow a script, okay, which is really, really simple. You're just asking specific questions, finding a problem that you can solve, and then seeing how committed that person is to that problem. It's really simple. The script should never be the problem, but the close is a major thing. It's a, people get really awkward with the close, but really it becomes really easy if you know you're doing the right thing. If you know you can help this person, it becomes really easy. And then it's just helping people make that decision, okay? So again, people will have many objections. You're just making sure you reiterate how important it is for this person to take this leap of faith to help them solve this problem. I think that's really, really important. But yeah, most people are awkward at the close, and it's their problem, you know? You ever hear the saying, that's a you problem. If you feel a certain way, that's a you problem. It's actually the salesperson is making the situation awkward. Whereas being nice and relaxed is so, so important, composed. And again, separating yourself from the sale is important. I mean, who really cares? You know, it's just a sale. You'll speak to another person tomorrow and the next day and the next day. Don't get attached to the final outcome. You just learn from it and move forward.
Yeah, you see it all the time, like people's voice starts going or they start speaking really, really fast, and that's where they start confusing the person they're talking to or worry the person they're talking to then, which has a bad ending, really. So I've asked a load of questions. I'll be writing them all down here on a notepad as we're going through. Is there any questions maybe you think I should have asked that I didn't ask about high ticket closing?
I don't think so, but I think it's a really unique market and industry that a lot of people don't know about, you know. Especially like I'm in the north of Ireland here, pretty rural. A lot of people don't know what it is. I mean, what's a high ticket closer? You're really you're a remote salesperson. You're helping a business grow, you know, you're influencing people to transition and transform their lives for the better. I think that's what's important. I think there is always a negative aspect, but that's with any industry. You have people that just, you know, they let the team down or let the side down, you know. But I think it's important to, you're really just a developer of relationships. And again, it's important to, you are influencing people to better themselves or better their business, you know, or to grow to say their comfort zone, which I think is a majorly positive thing, you know. I think when it comes to being a good salesperson, what I've realized is that your tonality is essential. Okay, your tone throughout the call to make that person you're speaking to feel relaxed is really, really important. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's massive. I mean, when you start talking too quick, or you start getting too aggressive, or you're going too slow, and it's different levels throughout the whole thing. Like I say, you just confuse them too much. Okay, so if anybody's watching this now or listening further down the line, then they're just like, oh, you know what? Shane's speaking loads of sense. I wish I knew this stuff. How could people potentially reach out and have a chat and learn more? And potentially, would you say you've got a free consultation that people could potentially book as well?
Yeah, look, as you know, you'll find me on all social media platforms. You've got LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. And again, I'm currently working with, three major companies, UK and two in America that I provide a service for. So whether it be helping them build their sales team of, again, you know, people that are driving that lead generation or high ticket closing. So I can help in whatever way people need to, but the consultation is, you know, it's just a chat really. It'll not be a sales call, you know.
You'll know because he'll ask you for a second call and then you'll know the sales.
Exactly.
Shane, I appreciate your time today. And for everybody that is listening, do feel free to reach out to Shane and have a chat and learn a little bit more, and obviously just get a little bit better at selling. But Shane, again, appreciate you coming on. Maybe we'll get you on further down the line, and maybe we'll dive into more of, I don't know, maybe a mindset, psychological side of selling further down the line as well.
Absolutely, David. Sounds good in here. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
No worries at all. Appreciate you, and I'll speak to you all soon. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us this week on another guest interview. Each and every Monday, we try and bring you a brand new guest interview to help you grow and scale your fitness business. As usual, if you haven't already subscribed to the channel, don't forget to subscribe below. And if you want to watch these interviews live and ask questions, then come and join us inside the Three Facebook group. I'll speak to you all next week. Cheers.